This is the beginning of class 3.
Sashi Bhagi Jushin Eta Jam Rira Vinshi Nyende Yampadi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogu Nanda Shimla Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyasuchi Dagi Chunyen Dibbe Sunangki Dora Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Vadu Dami Kyasuchi Dagi Chumyen Gimpe Sunangi Jola Penche Sangye Jupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Vadu Dami Suci, dahi cunyen kibe senangi, yola penche sangye jubasho.
Tonight we're going to discuss virtue and non-virtue. You know, what makes it virtue and non-virtue? What is non-virtue and non-virtue? And then, where does motivation play a part? I don't really like the translation virtue. I think when I think of virtue, I think of the cardinal virtues like patience and, gewa means good deed, more or less. The Tibetan word for virtue is gewa, more or less. The Tibetan word for virtue is gewa, okay? Gewa. I used to get it mixed up with gewa. Gewa means happiness. Gewa means virtue. Okay, so don't get it mixed up. And this is the definition of gewa. Okay, this is what gewa is. This definition comes from Chimjam Beyang. It's at the end of your reading. Chimjam Beyang was a 13th century Sakya scholar. And he, you know, as far as I can see, he was the greatest Abhidharma scholar in Tibet. As far as what we have left of writings. And it's a fantastic commentary. You know, if we ever get to study the whole thing, it'd be nice. No one's ever tried to translate it. It's very long. It's very difficult to read. It's just beautiful. It's a masterpiece. So, you know, people say, which sect you belong to, sometimes I don't know. But it's a great masterpiece. So, say, Dure Shila.
Dure Shila.
One word in the same term. Dure Shigla means in the short term. In the short term. What's the opposite of that?
Long term.
Yeah, okay, in the long term, right. So in the short term, Namin. Say Namin.
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 Namin is a very, very important word. If you're a Buddhist, you have to learn it. You know, it's related to a Sanskrit word pachyate, which means to cook something. And it means karmic cooking. It means, namin means the result of cooking. You know, that result which comes out after time. So a namin doesn't happen when?
In the short term.
In right away. Nagarjuna said it's very unfortunate that when you crush a bug, your own ribs don't start breaking. They will, but later. And there's this time lapse, which we'll explain when we get to the mental side of karma, which comes in this course. But he said it's very unfortunate, you know, that when you stab somebody with a knife, your own skin doesn't open up and start to bleed. If it did, we wouldn't be here probably. Actually, it's worse than that. You will be cut many times. It would be a big. It's one of the nasty things about samsara that it doesn't happen right away. Therefore, it confuses us, and therefore we still do those things. Okay. So namin means karmic result. Some people say ripening, which is a good translation. And min also does mean ripening. Like a ripe fruit is called nimba. A blister which is ready to pop is called nimba. Ripe. Yidu onwa means desirable, attractive. It comes from two words. Yi means mind, ong means come, and it means, you know, it pleases your mind. It comes to the mind. Yidu onwa. Dewa nyongwa. Dewa means happiness. It can mean physical or mental. There's two kinds of dewa. Tsorwa dewa in Abhidharma means physical pleasure. And yi dewa in Abhidharma means mental happiness. So that word, it's hard to use. I don't know if there's one English word that covers a good feeling physically and good feeling mentally. I'm not. Okay. It's not bliss. There's a different word. It's not that strong. It just means well-being or comfort, but mental and physical. Dewa nyongwa means to experience. Nyongwa means to experience. Dang means and. Dendu means ultimately, as opposed to reishik, which meant for the time being, okay, in the short term. So dendu means ultimately. Dungyal is dukkha in Sanskrit, suffering. And that can be physical or mental. I think suffering more covers both than pleasure covers both mentally and physically. You can suffer in your mind and in your body. Dungyal le means from. Le means from. Kyopa means to protect. Save you. Nyangde is the Tibetan word for nirvana. Nyangde means to pass beyond all sorrow. And it's the Tibetan translation for the word nirvana. Tofje means it brings you. That's the definition of gewa. Gewa means good deed, good karma. All right, so I'll give it to you in plain English. All right? I do the Tibetan so I can waste time, otherwise I'd finish anything in 20 minutes. Good deed is defined as something which in the short term brings you a pleasant experience that is a desirable karmic result.
Brings you pleasurable?
Yeah, experience. A desirable karmic result. It's in the last part of your reading. You don't have to write the whole thing. And which ultimately protects you from suffering by bringing you to nirvana. And that's the definition of virtue, of a good deed.
Well, that's a short term, I don't mean very short term.
Well, there's three, you should know, this is not on your homework or anything, but I mean, we're not going to get to this, because the fourth chapter of the Abhidharma is huge. There are three kinds of namins. There are three kinds of karmic results. One is called Tongyurgile. Tongyurgile means things you see in this life. And as I've said many times, this is the basis of the secret teachings. The secret teachings are based on the concept of Tongyurgile. That if you were to perform some incredible virtue in this life, you could see the result in this life before you die. Then there's, Genyen Yongyurgile, which means to be experienced in the very next life. And then there's the third kind is that which is experienced in the second life and on. So you've got three periods. One is this life, number two is next life, and number three is next life and up and beyond. Could be many, many lives. We'll talk about a little bit about that. Like, you know, if you do one karma today, can it hurt you in 10 lives or just one life? And if you can you do 10 karmas today which only hurt you in the next life and not in the next 9 lives? And we'll talk about that. The Abhidharma talks about that.
And
so
the that's categories the, of these three, I'm sorry, what was under?
Okay. Those were the kinds of karmic results. They can come in this life, later in this life. They can come in your next life, your very next life, or they can come out in any life after that.
Is there any very general rule to know?
Generally, most powerful, more sin they ripen. And as we spoke about in the last course, depends greatly on your mental state as you die. I spent last night with Alan, and it was the first time I did it. A lot of students have done it many times, but it's finished. I mean, that's it. You can't think straight. You can't remember anything. You can't walk. He was a student in this class. And it makes me think, you know, we'll all be like that. He just got it sooner, you know. He was the first. You know, there'll be number two, there'll be number three, one of us. You know? And it's very much, it urges you to practice if you see him. He was one of the most intelligent people I knew, you know. And that's it, he can't do it now.
Did he recognize you?
Dimly, like for 5 minutes during the whole night. It'll come to us. We just have to. The karma which threw us into this life is finishing. It's in the process of wearing out, and it will wear out. And we haven't done anything extraordinary to make it continue. So it's where we will go. Okay. So Gewa, and the important thing is that what decides whether something is for the time being or ultimately. See what I mean? Is every good deed you do, does every good deed you do contribute to your nirvana?
You're talking about the difference between desirable samsaric results versus desirable ultimate results.
Right. That's the basic thing. I mean, normally your good deeds, especially if they're done with ignorance and not dedicated to Buddhahood, just lead to a short-term result which wears out. Like our own body, like our life right now. These classes will end. You know, there'll be a last class, there'll be a last time that we're together. It will come. The deeds we did to have these classes will wear out. And that's a samsaric result, basically. Your body is that kind of result. It will wear out. And when it wears out after that, the energy that gave it to you is gone. It's finished. It depends on what new ones you make.
So only the ones that the good karmic results, that it doesn't matter how powerful they are. I mean, as long as they're made under ignorance, they're not...
Ignorance or not dedicated?
Not dedicated.
Dedication means, you know, as you do it, you wish that it would help all sentient beings and that it would make you a Buddha. And then it doesn't go to some temporary, you know, getting Haagen-Dazs for the next 5 years or something. You know what I mean? In fact, high arhats, according to the Abhidharma, can purposely do karma like giving medicine to someone and get extra lifetime result. And then they can decide to either use that or not to use that, and or dedicate it to something else. So it's very important that you dedicate your good deeds. It's very important that you... First of all, ignorance means as you do a good deed, do it quite consciously, knowing that why you're doing it. You know, the object is empty, you're empty. Your goal is that you and the object in the future reach some kind of permanent happiness. I mean, you always should keep that in mind as you do a good deed. Otherwise, mostly it just will wear out. And it's actually another kind of suffering. It's suffering of change, right?
So... you know, I mean, like when we do the meditations and we do the dedication, you know, some things become almost rote. Yeah. You know, what I'm trying to say is that how much is there that consciousness, or is it, you know, I mean, a lot of times you may just dedicate and it doesn't mean anything.
It has to be conscious and purposeful. You know, that's the main energy that makes it go towards a higher result.
So how do you know?
If you don't consciously dedicate it, but you say the words of dedication, it will still have some energy towards your nirvana, but not as much as if you consciously dedicated it to that properly, thinkingly.
I always wonder, you know, after the meditation, and I'm feeling very good, all right, so I sort of know, you know, something has happened for me. And then when I dedicate it to the world, it feels very much like, you know, new world, wishing it. You know, I don't really see the energy going out there. I don't really understand how that... Okay.
It has to do with ignorance, and we'll talk about how much ignorance is there. We talked about it a lot at the end of the last class. The basic thing is, just remember, I mean, nothing that you do good can ever get lost. You know, the perception of yourself doing good, as you see yourself doing good, and as you do good, it creates a seed in your mind. It must, and it will, and it always will, and you can't avoid it. You know, it's the same for negative deeds, for bad deeds.
So meditation is doing good deeds, then?
Absolutely. Well, it depends on why you do it. Some people meditate for pride, that other people know that they're meditating, and that's a bad deed. So it depends on your motivation. There's a famous non-Buddhist saint who, he wanted everyone to think he was a great meditator. He got this anger and this competitiveness, and he took a very bad birth from that. Yeah.
I don't really understand the whole concept of how dedicating your virtue or karma or merit works.
We'll talk about it. Right. It's not an Abhidharma subject necessarily, but we'll get into it when we talk about the nature of how karma works, which is the name of the course. The name of the course doesn't mean a lot until we hit the mind-only school. Yes, Mr. Guyton.
No? No, I'll save.
Okay. All right. So that's the definition of virtue. Definition of non-virtue. I'll just write the image.
Namin.
Yidu.
Yidu.
Miyongwa.
Miyongwa.
Migewa.
Migewa.
Namin means what? Do you remember? Pachyate?
Short.
A karmic cooking, all right? A karmic result. There are other kinds of results flying around in the world. Karmic result is that thing that takes time, it gets caused, it gets planted in your mind, the perception brews, and then comes out later.
What do you mean there are other kinds of results? I thought everything is a karmic result.
Well, for example, we describe in the Vinaya and in Abhidharma in the second chapter there are five or six kinds of results. There are many kinds of results. It doesn't mean that you had one in we had in Lugajabu, for example, in the Pramana course. You know, your mind at the first moment of your mother's womb is a result. It's called a direct result. It's also a karmic result. So it means there's different kinds of results. Ultimately, every result you can say is a karmic result. The Abhidharma doesn't agree with that, but that's a long story. Okay, namin yidu miyongwa means undesirable. Yidu miyongwa means undesirable, unpleasant. I'm sorry, undesirable. Midewa means unpleasant, and yongwa means experience.
What is
that? And it's referring back to the last definition. So it means that deed which brings you a karmic result which is unpleasant. That is suffering, unhappiness. It's hard to just... I guess suffering is a good word. Pain. Pain is not a good word. That's the definition of migewa. That's the definition of a bad deed. I like the definitions. They have nothing to do with judgment or guilt. You know? Nothing. Nothing to do with that. It's that if you do this, it will hurt you. And if you do this, it will make you feel good. And that's all. I think it's very, very nice. The reason to be moral in a most animal way is for your own self-interest. You know? Just do these things and you will be happy. And do these things and you will suffer. And there's no other being involved, there's no other people involved, it's just you. You know, it's what you decide you want. And that's what you get. And now, we can't see the karmic correlations. And that's, in the people who studied Pramana, do you remember the laws of karma were what? Were what kind of level of reality for us? Shindukokyo means... deeply hidden, not just hidden. Emptiness is on the level of hidden. Karmic, the laws of karma are on the level of deeply hidden. And you can only perceive that how? Based on authority. And you have to establish that the authority is authority. That's why you can believe it. But you can't, you and I can't really see how killing the roaches in our apartment is going to lead to a lot of suffering for us. You know, we don't see it directly. We just can't. And a Buddha does. So we have to depend a lot. you want to know what's gewa and what's migewa, by definition, you have to study this, the books. You have to study what the Buddha said, because that's the only way you'll get a really clear picture of what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And what does should mean? Should means if you want to be, you know, if you don't want to suffer, you know. So you have to put a lot of, I don't know, how do you say it? Trust or belief in those books. You have to study the books on the first part of the whole Vinaya. The whole first section of the Buddha's canon is 16 books explaining what's going to happen to you if you do certain things, and that you have to study them. You have to read them. And you have to think that they are worth something. You know, you can't pick and choose. I mean, if you do, you'll just suffer. You know, you have to follow what they say. That's all you can do. You can't, even when it doesn't feel like what you want to do, you have to distinguish between what you want to do and what's going to actually bring you happiness and what will actually bring you, you know, pleasure. And our current ignorance is the state of thinking that if you lie and get money, that's the cause of the money. You know, or if you lie, I lied there this morning, when was it? Oh, somebody called me, I was supposed to feed Alan at, I don't know, 11 o'clock, and I got wrapped up in something. It was 11:30, and somebody called and said, did you feed Alan? And I said, oh, well, you know, the other guy said something, and I could do it later or something. Didn't really say that.
What?
But it was just an automatic thing, you know. I'm thinking that will make him feel better and me better, feel better. But it's not. It's unrelated to his saying, okay, that's all right. You know, the reason he said, okay, that's all right, has nothing to do with my lie. My lie was not the cause of his saying, oh, that's all right. It had no connection. He believed me because I didn't lie before. And because I lie now, someone else won't believe me in the future. That's the true cause and effect that's going on. How can I prove it? Because sometimes when I make a lie, it doesn't work. That's the proof. It's a very simple proof. It's so obvious that you miss it. You know, if my telling a small white lie was the cause of him saying, oh, it's all right then it would always work. But it doesn't always work. The other kind of relationship, where I tell the truth and then people believe me as a numbing, as a karmic result in the future, it always works. Something that always works is a law. And something that works half the time, you know, you lie, you get a profit, and sometimes you lie and you go bankrupt. That's not cause and effect. The lie had nothing to do with making the profit, and the lie had nothing to do with going bankrupt. We just don't understand the cause and effect. And therefore we just suffer. And that's the whole point of karma. That's the whole guts of karma. Yeah.
Well, there are times when it appears, to our limited perspective, that somebody's doing something incredibly virtuous, like trying to save someone's life, and yeah, in the process they get killed.
That's why it can't be the result of them helping the person.
But if they didn't try to help the person, they wouldn't have been in the line of gunfire.
They would have. Yeah, they would have died some other way in the same moment. It's cool.
In the same moment.
I mean, but we can't do it. You know? I still lie. Yeah.
What do you mean by in the same moment?
I mean so the Abhidharma actually approaches this question. They say it's exactly in the Abhidharma. I could read it to you. I could show it to you. It's the Bardowa. If a person in the Bardo is meant to take birth as a certain kind of animal, and that animal never goes into heat during that certain month, what happens? At least born into a similar kind of animal, it does. You see, it's called a yoele, and it means that most kinds of karma will divert to the same result in a different form if the conditions aren't ready for that karma to ripen. So if the person had never gone to help the person, he would have been hit by a car anyway. So you see, this is in the Abhidharma, it's stated in the Abhidharma.
But, I mean, isn't that impossible? Wasn't it the person's karma to die being helped by this person, and that's it? I mean, you know.
It's... technically, yes.
But
anyway, the Abhidharma does say that.
You were just talking about lies.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of us who lie from time to time do so with the other...
All I'm saying is... By the way, I'm sorry to interrupt you, and I'll let you talk, but... What I'm saying is it doesn't work. It's dysfunctional. It doesn't really do... It only gives you... The only thing that can come from a bad cause is a bad result. That's a law. That's just true with fruits and kids and everything else. You know, if the cause is lousy, the result must be lousy. We're just blind to it. We've been doing it so long, we're just used to it. Yeah.
So at any rate, we do lie a lot of times because by telling the truth, someone's going to suffer a great deal. That's the way we feel, or at least we fool ourselves into thinking that, or that's actually the case. So if they suffer a great deal by us telling the truth, it wasn't from us telling the truth, it was from something else, and we shouldn't necessarily be influenced.
You are supposed to avoid, you know, at all costs, you're not supposed to upset people, for example. You know, if someone asks you a direct question, if someone asks you a question which is not totally direct, and you know that a totally direct answer would upset them or hurt them badly, you're not supposed to give that answer. Are you supposed to lie? No. And you try to change the subject, cough, go to the bathroom. do whatever you can to avoid them. If you have bodhisattva vows, they take precedence over your pratimoksha vows.
Pratimoksha is like
swearing not to lie. So then you don't break them. So a bodhisattva, if you're going to keep the bodhisattva vows, for example, you must lie to protect them. The example is if a person runs into your house and the mugger is running after him, and he says, "Did the guy run into your house?" You say, "No." You know, you look him in the face and say, "No." And that's it's a higher level of morality. But that's very, very dangerous. You have to... It's extraordinary cases, and we are not extraordinary people. We can't do even the unextraordinary things, you know. Everyone wants to be extraordinary, you know. No one wants to follow the regular rules, you know. If you want to be happy, do the regular old stuff, you know. And we'll get into that, okay? Okay, what's the... I have one more definition for you. Yiduong is the same one as up there. Yiduong means a desirable result. Miong means what? Yeah, me is a negative in Tibetan. Miong means not desirable result, undesirable result. Gyepa means gives you. Here. Dinyi means these two. These two. Lei Shemba means other types than those. Lei means karma. Is the definition of, what do you guess? What's left after virtue and non-virtue?
Neutral
karma. Lungma den means neutral karma. Neutral karma. And I'll say the whole thing in English. By the way, lungma den is a very interesting word. Okay. It means lungdu matemba. And lungdu matemba means not clarified by the Buddha. Now, is everything that wasn't clarified by the Buddha directly a neutral karma? No. But what it means is, it's just the Tibetan word, it's the Buddhist word for neutral. And if the Buddha could speak forever about every kind of deed, he wouldn't clarify this as virtue or non-virtue. Then you could say it was neutral. That's what they're saying. Okay. It's not that the Buddha didn't talk about it, necessarily. It's not that he didn't clarify. There's a lot of things he didn't clarify. In the Vinaya, you know, it's huge. But that's where the word comes from. So just so you, she looked like she wanted to know. Okay. So neutral karma means karma, which is other than those two, which give you desirable or undesirable results, karmic results. That's neutral karma. Neutral karma is very much mixed up into, ignorance, which is not where you're not doing anything particularly at the time. You know, sitting watching TV, not thinking anything good or bad, is like a neutral karma. You are blanketed in blissful ignorance, and that's what's operative there. It's ignorance. Hatred and desire are pretty much moving in the other one, in the Nigiwa, in the non-neutral.
Even when you're sitting watching TV, you're still thinking thoughts and generating mental karma.
Yeah, neutral, mostly neutral karma.
Because it's not hurting anyone or helping anyone?
Mainly because it's not. I mean, in the Vinaya, they say, Shenu Shidan Chepale, Domadeya Nulale, Sitanya Shidu, the voice of the Buddha, Sadhu Nichiya. That means the main element of morality is that it shouldn't hurt. Is that you don't? Is that you're trying to avoid hurting other people, or yourself? For example, we'll talk about later. Suicide is a bad karma.
So should you avoid neutral?
You can. Your mind is still. You should actually, for the time being, it's a better thing to get into. Well, virtue is better, but that's why they say when you get anger, if you don't have the strength to go apologize to the person you got angry to, well, at least withdraw from the situation if you can. You know, at least leave it alone. That if the Dalai Lama loves that quotation. I think it's from Shantideva, which is, you know, like, if you can't stop hurting people,
don't harm them.
At least don't harm them. Was it? Is that how it goes?
It says, be
well, if you can't be good, at least don't hurt people. Yeah. You know, at least be neutral. Okay. So those are the three kinds of karma. Good karma itself can be divided into four kinds. Dundam means ultimate. That's the word, by the way, in ultimate truth when you're talking about emptiness in the higher schools. Dundam gela. Gela means what?
Good deed.
Good deed. Okay. Dundam gela. What do you think is the ultimate good deed in the Abhidharma school?
Nirvana.
Tapa. Moksha. Liberation. Nirvana. If you were in a debate in a monastery, and this would be a good fodder for debate, you'd have to say that this is not gela. It's not an action which leads to a karmic result, which is
a result.
It is the ultimate result. So, but it's dakpala. It's nominally virtue. I mean, it's the best thing that can happen. So we'll call it virtue. Okay. It's not technically. It's not a deed which causes, you know, those things. It is the thing that you get.
I guess you could say it prevents you from doing bad deeds.
That you could say. So that's the first kind of good deed. Yeah.
Now you're talking about yourself
reaching
nirvana, or helping others?
In Abhidharma, it's mostly concentrating on yourself. You know? It doesn't say Buddhahood. And nirvana and Buddhahood are different. Nirvana is the permanent cessation of your bad thoughts, which causes you not to have to take a birth. A suffering birth. You still will go on. And then Buddhahood is when you remove both all your obstacles and also become omniscient. So that's a different. Say mo.
Mo.
Niki.
Niki.
Gewa.
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 Yeah. Gewa. By the way, in the Abhidharma, which you'll read, there are four famous examples for these. And the first one is it's a healthy body, good, strong, healthy body. It's comparable to number one, nirvana, ultimate virtue.
A healthy body?
I understand how it relates.
It's just an example. We'll see why. Mm-hmm. Metaphor. How's metaphor? Metaphor, sorry. That's better. Lomamiki Gyoa means virtue by its very essence. Virtuous by essence. Virtuous by its very nature.
These are, you said, three types of karma, meaning good or bad karma, or just good karma?
I'm
going to
get to the bad also.
Which
I'm going to give you four, actually.
Which word is which?
Ngowo means nature. Ni means essence, a very, very nature. Ki means by very nature. And gewa means good deed. So good deed by its very nature. There are five things which are just, by their very nature, are good deeds. And I'll give them to you. The first three are called the three roots. Three roots of virtue.
This is the first three?
Yeah, of the five.
Number two.
Yeah, we're still in number two. You're going to get to number three and four after your break, okay? So there are three kinds of mental functions which are, by their very nature, virtuous. They can never be non-virtuous. Okay. And those are... I'm making a bad translation purposely. Okay. I'll tell you why. When you have a negative word in Tibetan, this is also Chimjambayang. You know that Sakya, great Sakya scholar. And it's stated in the Abhidharma by Vasubandhu. When you have this negative in Tibetan, non-desire, He says that negative could be three things, and you don't have to write this down. It could mean just a simple lack of desire. It could mean something other than desire, like happiness or feeling good about what dinner you had and things like that. That's also a kind of non-desire, right? So it could be just that you don't feel any desire right now. It could be that your mind is on something else right now. Or it could be the active antidote for desire. You know, it could be actively not seeing this thing in the wrong way and therefore not wanting it in the way that you normally want things. So which one do you think non-desire is?
It's that antidote
one. Okay, it's not just that you don't have desire at that moment. And it's not that you're just thinking about something else at that moment. Non-desire in Abhidharma, as a root of virtue, as a kind of mental function that is by its very nature virtuous, is, you know, not having, is understanding and not wanting that thing for the wrong reasons. That's non-desire.
Understanding what?
Ultimately, to have desire, you have to misunderstand the object. You see, desire, when it's a troublemaker, is involved with not understanding the object.
So you understand the absolute nature of the object.
If you want a beautiful girl to be your girlfriend, the best thing you can do is keep your morality. It's not an obvious, you know, that's non-desire. That's understanding as something which, when it moves into your consciousness, stupid desire has to move out. Okay. Now, of course, they'll fight for a while, you know. Stupid desire will come back and kick out non-desire. That's Buddhist education, you know. As you go through your spiritual education, there's a long period, a very long period, when they're both fighting. And they're moving in and out, you know. Okay, non-hatred is the same. That means to want to avoid an unpleasant object. This is, by the way, the chicken, what is it, the rooster and the pig and the snake in the middle of the Wheel of Life painting, which you can see. You know, people say hatred and desire, it's more subtle than that. If it's going to be the root of the Wheel of Life, it's got to be more subtle than that. You know, I didn't want to rape anybody today, and I didn't want to kill anybody today, but I had those animals in my mind all day long. You know, they're not as strong as the word desire and hatred. You know, they are almost like liking and not liking for the wrong reason or with ignorance. They're very subtle. You have them in your mind constantly. That's why you're collecting karma constantly.
So, same explanation. You see the selflessness, and so you don't...
Wanting to avoid unpleasant objects, really. It's not as bad as hatred where you blow up at somebody and you want to choke them, you know. I mean, that's what the word would imply. I don't know about that translation. Okay.
So the same explanation as non-desire, you see the selflessness and so you don't hate it?
You can dislike it, but you know what to do to avoid it. You don't want suffering. I'm not saying you should enjoy it when the dentist is drilling your teeth. But you understand the emptiness of it and you do what you have to do. And I should say the guy at work, right? The bad guy at work. Of course, it's unpleasant. You should dislike someone who's trying to stab you in the back. That's a bad thing. How to get out of that is a different story. You know, it's not by avoiding him or hurting him or responding to him violently. That just doesn't work. That's not how to get rid of that guy. You should want to get rid of that guy. I swear to God, in Tushita Heaven, there's no guys like that. You know, you really. It's not like you reach some kind of I don't care attitude or something. Not like that.
Would we say like stupid hatred?
Stupid hatred.
Sort of righteous indignation?
Okay. What do you guess the third one is?
Wisdom?
Non-ignorance. And it's called wisdom. Actually, no, it's called non-ignorance. It's called Tigmu Meba. It is a negative. It is called non-ignorance. You know, I translated this book 15 years ago, and I translated it as lack of, and then nowadays I think I wouldn't want to. I think non is better. It's not a simple lack of ignorance. It's the active opposite of ignorance. It's wisdom. And obviously that's the root of the other two in the same way that, which one is the pig? That's ignorance, right? Yeah. In the same way that the pig is the cause of, in some good Wheel of Life paintings, the rooster and the snake are coming out of the mouth of the pig. I don't know what. Sometimes they're in a circle, I don't know which one that is, but the more the older ones and the more correct ones, the snake and the cock are coming out of the pig's mouth. Because he's the root of those two. Huh?
This one is like...
Yeah. Cool. Oh, cool.
All right. So would you say the
in the older paintings sometimes they're in a circle. That also has its own meaning.
Would the translations of attraction and aversion, would you consider those to be accurate?
I like them pretty well, but maybe you should add stupid aversion. I mean, between us, okay? I don't want to see your next translation like nobody will buy it. Okay. I'll give you the next two roots, and then we'll take a break.
You said three roots.
Well, I'm sorry. We had three roots of virtue. Now I'm going to give you two. These are actually, I shouldn't call them roots. These are, in the Abhidharma presentation of the mental functions, which you should learn someday, which is great. It's called Sankhya. Anytime you have a virtue, anytime you're doing something good, these two are normally involved.
Okay. So what would you use to
Literally, they're called mental functions which are omnipresent in a virtuous mind. I don't know what you want to call them. These two that I'm going to say now are always there when you're doing something good, according to the Abhidharma.
Why do you put four and five?
Because I said, I'm going to give you five kinds of number two. I should have said A, B, C, D, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have three roots there.
Okay. There are three roots. And then there's two, what do you call it? Parts.
What?
Of virtue. These two I'm about to give you
are
always there when you're doing something good, according to the Abhidharma. And they are D and E of number two. Is that better, Vikari?
Yes.
If I don't do this quickly, if I didn't fix it the way you said, then you got to see the homeworks I get back. And it's my fault. I would say for changing your character and your behavior, which is supposed to be part of the reason for these classes, you know. I mean, if you haven't changed your behavior or character much in the last year or two,
20.
The classes are pretty much a failure. You know, and sometimes I think I don't emphasize that enough. You know, sometimes I feel guilty, you know. That I do too much scholastic stuff and not enough, you know, urging you to virtue, you know. But these are two very useful ones. You know, if you have them, if you think about them, if you meditate about them, if you don't meditate at the end of your homework, I'm not going to take them anymore. If the homework comes in without meditation time, I'll give it back. If it says I was busy, you know, if it says, you know, my dog died and I had to leave, I don't mind. That's okay. But if it's just that you didn't think you had 15 minutes to spend on it, you're never going to be a teacher. You're never going to be able to transmit anything to anybody. You're never going to reach any spiritual five paths. You've got to be in meditation to do those. You've got to do that for at least, you know, 45 minutes, an hour a day. You won't get anywhere. So, you know, I'm serious about the last life. And you really do have to do it. 15 minutes, come on. You go to the bathroom, I don't care. Do it. I used to do that, you know. I used to tell my... I was in the middle of these management meetings. Kylie knows they're like 5 hours long. The vice presidents all talk. And I would just say, I got to go to the bathroom. Nobody says you can't go to the bathroom, you know. And go to the bathroom and put the seat down and sit on it. And, you know, 15 minutes, come on. 24 hours, that's 1%. All right. Moksha means to avoid a bad deed. And I don't know how to say it exactly in English, but it's because you would... be embarrassed by yourself. Shame. I translate it as shame.
Because?
It means that in a room with a guy's wallet, with no one else around, and no one would ever know, or when I used to be in a hotel room at the Princeton Club and they had XXX movies on cable TV, no one would ever know, you know, should I turn it on or not? You know, after a Buddhism class. I used to struggle with that, and I used to fail sometimes. And that's called Moksha. If you stop, because you have the inner...
Conscience.
Right?
Well, when I get to the next one, let's see. Okay, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Anyway, Moksha means, for reasons relating to yourself, you avoid a bad deed. That's the definition of Moksha. You know, in a room, by yourself, out of your own self, what do you call it? Esteem or something. You avoid a bad deed. That's called Moksha. And telia, what do you guess telia is? This is why you avoid a bad deed, because you're afraid someone will find out. You're embarrassed by, you know, that's where I don't eat after dinner if people are around, but if they're not around, I might sneak a cookie, you know. That's telia, but not mota. You know, I'm embarrassed to eat in front of you guys, but after you leave, you know, no mota. That's telia means in front of other people, that other people would find out. I mean, a lot of people will keep the morality just because they're afraid of what would happen if other people found out. That's called telia.
But you're talking about doing good deeds. You're talking about avoiding bad deeds.
Yeah, it's defined negatively. The word is dzemba, which means to avoid a bad deed.
So is not stealing a good deed? I thought being generous was a good deed, and not stealing was a neutral deed.
But these are mental. These are mental functions. It's defined negatively. It's not doing a bad deed because you're embarrassed or you're ashamed.
Not doing a bad deed.
I know, it's not as good as doing a good deed. I know. But these two mental functions are always there when you're doing virtue. That's what they say. I understand what you mean. To give is not to steal. Charity is not stealing. It's a different thing. But they're defined this way. That's how they define it.
Can you turn these around and say that you would do a good deed because you want others' approval, or you want others to find out?
They don't define it that way. It's defined negatively. So that's the first two. We'll do the second two after the break in about 10 minutes.
Would you define not doing a non-virtue as a virtue? Is that
that's what she asked. And apparently the Abhidhamma does. That's how they define it. Pedro, it's this. And it is very important. One of the greatest forms of virtue you can do is to avoid a bad deed when you're on the verge of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No,
I mean, if you're just about to do something that you really have an impulse to do, and then your wisdom overcomes it, that's a great virtue. And I think that's the idea. Something you would have done, that's the whole point, you know, of morality. Morality means you get close to falling and you stop. That we'll see it later with the
How about life? Making sure you don't get close to it.
That's also a good thing.
What about when it's not clear what's virtuous? Like, for instance, if you were working for a political party or something and you believed that they had really good motivation, they were going to help people, but they wound up doing really horrible things?
We'll talk about it. The Sampa, Jorwa, Nuishi, Tatu. There's four elements of a karmic path, which means a complete karma. And your Sampa is virtuous. Your motivation is virtuous. Your Jorwa, your application of your own effort, was virtuous. Mushi was bad. You know, what actually happened was bad. The tartuk, which means, were you happy about that mushi or not? Did you take pleasure in the fact that they were screwing up people? Or you didn't. You regretted it. So you only collected a quarter. And a quarter of a karmic path is not very... in that circumstance, wouldn't be very... it's like involuntary manslaughter or something. Buddhism is a lot like a court, because a court is trying to be just, you know, and that's also true. You do collect some bad deeds. How did Nagarjuna die, you know?
Blade of grass, cushion grass.
Somebody cut his head off. Why?
Because he had cut a bug's head off.
He had cut a bug's head off.
A what?
He had accidentally cut a bug's head off. Accidentally cut a bug's head off. Huh? In a form of life. Some of God did that.
That's significant. that's significant karma.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, I laugh and I say, oh, come on, that's too much. But it's really the truth. And I don't want to downplay it. You know, we have to be that careful. And if you are, you'll be happy. And if you're not, you won't.
Got
to practice.
Okay.
I'm 17. Ultimately virtuous. I mean, divine is ultimately virtuous. Second one is virtuous by nature of its own nature. You know, there was nothing else it has to be. Just by being itself, it's virtuous. Now we get to a thing called Tsungden virtue. Okay. Tsungden, say Tsungden.
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 Tsungden is a very difficult idea. It means a mental link. And your mind and the functions going on in the mind are linked in five different ways. And we're not going to get into that. But what it means is that if you have in your mind a very, very virtuous thought, that thought itself is virtuous. But what about your feelings at that time? And what about your intelligence at that time? And what about your very awareness at that time?
Your actions.
They all become... Not the actions. We're getting to that later. All of those mental things going on in your mind at the same time as you have a powerful virtue are also virtue because they are locked in the same room with that virtuous thought.
What is it, the answer?
By association, you can say. Sungden means virtuous by association.
Would it be possible to have the virtuous thought and then have the following emotions be different than that and non-virtuous?
And that's what we call karnakile. That's karnak jendegile, which means the black and white karma mixed. And that's an Abhidhamma discussion that they get later. Yeah. Just think of them as discrete. The virtue was virtue, the non-virtue was non-virtue.
So feelings, what else?
There's a lot of them, but basically you can think of your capacity to feel. Your ability to feel, your feelingness, your feeling ability. At that moment when you have a powerful virtue in your mind, you know you're thinking to save someone's life, then all the other functions in your mind become virtue by association. They are not virtuous by themselves. But because they're present in your mind when that powerful virtue is present, they become virtuous by association. And that's what Sungden means.
As functions rather than the contents of those. Like you're feeling, I have a virtuous thought, my feeling is virtuous by association,
right.
Or my very capacity to feel.
It's a good question, the capacity itself, and I don't want to get into it. That's a whole study of Abhidharma psychology, and that's difficult. The ability to discriminate, which is going on in your mind, the ability to say, this is Tom, this is Eric. If I'm teaching this class with an extraordinary virtuous motivation, And at that time, I distinguish between you two. That function of discrimination is also virtuous. By association, it's in the same brain as my virtuous thought. Mm. And just by good luck, he's also virtuous. Yeah.
It sounds a little bit like rejoicing. If you do a really good act, that's one thing. And then being happy about it and aware of it and all that is
even more. No, a different thing. That's a different thing. Sungden means mental functions which are normally neutral are colored by the virtuous thought that you have. They're like clear glass. The virtuous thought is like a deep blue. And the virtuous thought is put into the same area. So all the glass around the virtuous thought takes on a blue hue. And that's exactly the way Sungden is explained. The virtue is so good that the other brothers in the same mind at the same time, which are all neutral, take on that tint of virtue. And that's called virtuous by association. It's not a major concept. I mean, you don't have to be happy that your consciousness is virtuous when you're avoiding a bad deed, but it happens to be true. It's not one of the main points. Yeah.
It's like driving is usually kind of neutral, but if you're driving to go to Dharma class,
it would be like that. But Sungden refers specifically to mental association. You know, it's only the association between mental things.
So what if you can?
Driving is an event. Sungden means. Like if you're very angry, then your actual perceptive ability, your awareness itself, is influenced, is tainted by that anger and becomes a non-virtue. That's what he's saying. The actual awareness, the general mind, becomes tainted by association at that moment, and it's non-virtuous at that moment. Abhidhamma. The last one is Dr. Stallions.
Mike, would it be accurate to perceive that as a linked chain reaction because the primary thought is virtuous? There's like a domino effect of like pinging down to all the associated mental
it's
functions.
It's a good question. Now, when you say a domino effect, you're talking a progression in time. When I say by association, one of the five qualities of association is that it's simultaneous. It's not that you have a virtue and then 2 or 3 seconds later, the actual awareness, your mind consciousness is virtuous. As soon as you have a virtuous thought, because you must have awareness also going on at the same time, your mind must be operating at the same time. The mind itself becomes virtuous.
So all mind
because and one function of the mind is virtuous.
So all mind and mental functions are occurring simultaneously?
They're all simultaneous. In a Sungden relationship. Sungden means linked.
I thought only one thing could be happening in the mind at once. You're saying all those things are happening
at once. Oh, no, not when you're talking mental functions and the main mind, they're operating at the same time. It's like the engine on the ship and the front of the ship and the sides of the ship, they're all operating at the same time. They're parts of the mind, actually. Okay, Gunlong means virtuous by motivation. Gunlong means motivation. This refers to verbal and physical acts, which are virtuous. They become virtuous by virtue of what? You know, the thought that you do them with. There's this famous story in Tibet. I heard it in Dharamsala 20 years ago. I could visualize it, because this happens in Dharamsala. You're often walking up the mountain and a rainstorm comes during the monsoon. You're constantly getting soaked. And they have all these Buddha images out on the stones, on the rocks, you know. So there's a story about a guy who, this poor guy, he's like, all he's got is a dhoti, which is one of those towels that the Indian people wear around their waist. And they go around with nothing but that on. And he's got these sandals on. So he's walking by this Buddha image, and it starts to rain, and he's got this, all he's got, he says, somebody should cover this Buddha image, it's getting wet. If he takes his dhoti off, it's the only thing he's got on. I mean, that's pretty common in India. I tried to wear one once. I couldn't keep it up. And then he's got his sandals. So out of devotion, he takes his sandal and he covers the Buddha's head with his sandal. And it's, you know, it's a very virtuous act. Then 5 minutes later, this guy's walking down the path, you know, and he looks over there and there's some idiot has put a dirty shoe on top of the Buddha's head, you know. And he goes over and he throws it away, you know, and they both collected a huge virtue. By kumlo. Okay. By motivation. Same, different, opposite deeds, same kumlo, same virtue. It's a very famous example. Okay, so that's normally what you think of when you think of virtue. You know, when I say virtue, when I say good deed, you're thinking good deed mostly by motivation. But just remember, there's other things which are good deeds just by their very nature. To be embarrassed. I think it was, I don't know, Socrates or somebody said, he saw a young man and he blushed and he said, that blush is a sign of virtue. You know, you're embarrassed about something. That's a sign that you care, that you do something right or wrong. That's virtue by essence. You know, to be embarrassed to do something wrong is just by itself virtue. And then other kinds of virtue, like your consciousness, your very awareness, are virtuous by association. And then some deeds of not lying or trying to help someone, trying to protect life, those are virtuous by your motivation. And then ultimate virtue is nirvana. So those are the four.
I want to go these very include bad non-virtues also.
Yes, good question. Yeah. I don't think they include neutral. I'm not sure. And by the way, the metaphors, which are not on your homework or anything, okay. Nirvana is like a healthy body. Virtue by very nature is like, they say it's like a medicinal herb. It's like an herb that has the power to cure something. And then virtuous by association is like the medium in which you mix it. You know, the liquid in which you mix the herb before you drink it? Like the water. You know, in Tibetan medicine, sometimes you have to mix it into water and then you drink it. You know, the water by itself is neutral. But as soon as you mix in all these herbs, the water itself becomes beneficial, medicinal. And then the last one, virtuous by motivation, they say, is like a mother whose milk is beneficial or medicinal because she's been taking a lot of these Tibetan herbs, you know what I mean? Like, the outcome of that liquid going through her whole system and coming out as the essence of milk, that milk itself has some kind of beneficial quality to it. And that's virtuous by motivation. That's the metaphor. And then poisonous herbs are the opposite. You know, if you want to talk about non-virtue, then poisonous herb itself is what? What's the ultimate non-virtue?
Ignorance.
Hell.
Samsara. Suffering life, our suffering life, is the ultimate non-virtue. That's cool.
That's resulting.
Yeah, it's always nirvana. You see, it's not a true non-virtue. Yeah. It's a metaphor. It's the ultimate non-virtue and the ultimate virtue have nothing to do with, really. It's just ultimate goodness and ultimate evil. Ultimate evil is to live this lousy life that we are living. Okay. That's the ultimate evil. And that's compared to a poisonous herb. What is, what was the second one? By nature. Oh, by nature. I'm sorry. Ultimate evil is a sick body. Right? And that refers, that's a metaphor for samsara. For this, for being locked into the kind of bodies we have that has to degenerate. And then secondly, what was the second one? Virtuous by nature is the poisonous herbs. Non-virtuous by nature is the poisonous herbs. Non-virtuous by association is the water in which you mix the poisonous herbs before you give them to your enemy. The water is nothing, it's neutral by itself, but because it's mixed in the same glass, it becomes non-virtuous. And then the last one is what? Non-virtuous by motivation is compared, it's a metaphor, is a woman who takes that drink, and then her milk harms her baby. The milk is...
takes.
Excuse me?
Takes it for the purpose of harming.
Yeah, you could say that. It's a metaphor. They don't say that, but it's just that it's the milk is like the outcome, or the milk is the... What do you call it?
Result?
It's the consequence of the... in the way that a bad deed is a consequence of a bad motivation.
But if she was taking bad medicine without knowing it...
Yeah, no, obviously, no? Obviously. Well,
so it has to be knowingly, right? Or for the purpose of harming.
Yeah, it does have to be.
The motivation?
Yeah. Motivation of a non-virtuous motivation has to be, pretty much has to be with intent to harm. Except that there's some kinds of ignorance which can also be. But we'll get into that. By the way, there's a long reading in your reading about motivation. It's very difficult. I never got it 100% straight myself.
You're welcome.
You know, cook it. It's not on your homework. I put it in there. You can read it. It's about the nature of motivation. It divides motivation into the motivation you have as you enter an act, and then the motivation you have as you continue an act. And then there's different. Ignorance plays a different role in each of those, and that's I'm not going to get into because I don't understand it myself. And it's not. It's not. Treated in the higher schools that I know of. So I'm not sure where it's there. I wanted to go over with you the 10 non-virtues in 6 minutes. Just so you can't say you had a karma course and you never heard the 10 non-virtues.
The clock's ringing as fast. You have 9 minutes.
Oh, okay, good. You know I'll take 20 anyway. Sokje?
Sokje.
Majinmen?
Majinmen.
Logyam.
Logyam.
Okay, these are the first three of the ten. They're all done through the gateway of your what?
Body.
Body, as opposed to your speech or mind. When you read the reading, you'll see in the Abhidharma, Vasubandhu says, like, for example, how many kleshas are there? How many bad thoughts are there? How many root bad thoughts?
84,000.
There's six root ones. There's 84,000 total. There's also 84,000 bad karmas. And Vasubandhu says, look, if I got into them all, the book would never end. I'm going to give you 10. The point is that these 10 you are doing all the time. We are doing all the time. If you are who you look to be, which I don't have a seminar about, you're close to them, or they're very likely. I mean, out of the 84,000, these are the top 10. All right? And you know, if you do nothing else from the karma class, maybe we should just do this for 10 classes, I don't know. But if you get some sort of increased awareness of how, or some increased sensitivity to when you're close to one of these 10, that would be a great result of this class. You know, if you actually changed as a result of this class, that would be great. You know. Are they, you know, should you feel guilty? Are they wrong? Is someone going to beat you up? It's not like that. These 10 things, by their nature, will cause you suffering, must cause you suffering. Must get you in trouble. Never will help you. Never do them. if something good happens because you did one of them, it had nothing to do with it. Just get used to thinking like that. Just avoid them. Your life will be much happier. Guaranteed. 100%. Okay. So, sokje. Sok means life. Je means to cut. And sokje means killing. Obviously, any living being. So, therefore, including who?
Roaches.
And yourself. Okay. So, suicide is also included here. I mean, I'm not going to go into a big thing about all the different forms of all these, but I think it's important to say suicide, and in the scripture it says, Mi Amir Chakpa. Mi means a living human, or a human. Mir Chakpa means an embryo, a fetus. So according to Buddhism, a being is living at conception, and to destroy that would be killing, would be murder. So that's so, just so you know, I mean, that's the Buddhist viewpoint. I think that covers two that you might wonder about.
What did sok chu mean again? What cut?
To cut life, which means
which
to kill.
Ones? But which ones?
Sok is life, and chu means cut. What's Dorje Chupa?
Diamond cutter.
Dorje Chedaka. Diamond cutter sutra. Yeah.
Okay. Cut life. Do you mean plants?
Buddhism doesn't say that plants have life. It was a debate in Japan much later. Maybe 1300 years later, you know, they started to debate, the Japanese Buddhists started to debate whether or not, you know, what's his name, lived in Kyoto, Saigyo, started to debate it. But no, in the classical scriptures, plants aren't considered life. They look like life. They act like life. And in fact, in the prominent scriptures, there's an example, the way that leaves curl up and die when you cut the trunk, is considered a non-tema. So you, those of you who had the last class, to think that a tree has life in the sense of conscious life, because when you cut it, it dries up, is an error, according to Dharmakirti. And so that's just a, you know, a Buddha can emanate as a tree. And even in some extraordinary cases, a very bad person can emanate and look like a tree. Emanate as a, you know, take a birth as a tree and have some kind of suffering. You read that in Dante, it's interesting. You also read it in Buddhist sutras. So that's possible. But in and of itself, plant life is not life. And in fact, the Tibetan and Sanskrit words don't say to kill a tree, they say to dry a tree. And when a tree dies, they don't say die, they say dries. So they don't even use the words life or die or live. Okay. Majin Lin. Majin Len, Majin means not given. Len means to take what is not given, which means stealing. If you say it as to take what is not given, it's even a little more powerful. I was with the Dalai Lama's biographer one day, and we were pulling a leaf off a tree, and we both stopped and we said, "Oh, Majin Len, nobody gave us this leaf." You know, it was in someone's front yard. That's Majin Len. I can't think of anything special to say about that except that, you know, not paying taxes is Majin Len. You know, a social contract in which you've agreed, you know, you're expected. The custom of the country is very strongly considered in Buddhist morality. You know, it's not always correct. Like, if the country says you can have abortion, that doesn't mean you should kill fetuses. But if the country says you really should pay your taxes, and if you've agreed to take all the benefits of paying taxes and then you don't pay taxes, that's Majin Len.
Yeah, what happens if the taxes are used to proliferate?
If they're used for violence, it's your responsibility to at least to inform the authorities that you don't agree with that. But you're not, you know, you can or cannot go to jail because you believe that. But you really should inform them, you know, that I prefer that my taxes don't go for killing. And I don't support the military effort that you're using with my taxes. Even though I feel that I'm not obligated to pay taxes, I want to publicly and formally tell you that I don't agree with that, and I don't want the karma of my taxes going for that, which is a karma. Logia, which is in the Abhidhamma, by the way. Logia means sexual misconduct. The main one is adultery, but it's not limited to that. Homosexuality is considered logia, and there's scriptural references for it. Masturbation is logia. Having sex with your relatives is, you know, within a certain number of generations is logia. having sex in front
within
of
within a number of generations, I mean cousins?
Well, there's a certain, I don't remember, I can look it up for you, but like after ninth cousin it's okay or something like that. But what it means is there's many, many kinds of logyam. Consenting adults who are not married is not logyam in Buddhism, according to Buddhism. You don't have to be married to have sex in Buddhism. It's not a bad deed. As long as, and if the girl is underage or if according to the custom of that country it's underage, that's also logyam. So those are all, this is a long list. To have sex in the presence of a Buddha image or a stupa or a church or a temple is logyam. So those are logyam. I have many students who have all of these things. Any kind of sex except for the usual kind is also like oral sex is logyam. And that's, you know, I know that's not the custom of the country. And maybe it's many of the things that I mentioned. But I think you should know what the scriptures say. And, you know, I could show it to you and, you know, yeah.
Is there any explanation off of things like that? Can you look it up in the computer maybe?
I've had people ask me, you know, they've asked me this. On the basis that it doesn't harm anyone, then isn't it okay? And the people are consenting and everything like that. I know the scriptural references that, I mean, I can show you the ones where it says it's not, it is logia. Are there references which explicitly say why it's harmful? I can show you some oblique references. I haven't come across anything in my own study, which is not very deep, that I could show you that why it's harmful. But I would say that, you know, just off, my answer to that would be there's a lot of fine points of morality that, as I said at the beginning, be aware of them. And the Buddha taught them. The Buddha knows. The Buddha can see that if you hurt someone, what's exactly going to come to you. At certain points, you have to, you know, trust that what he says. You know, can I show you a scriptural reference of exactly what bad deed would come if you commit that? I'd have to work on it. It's probably in the Kanya. It's probably in the Vinaya. And within the next few years, I'll get through that. And, you know, I'll show you. I just tell you as friends, you know, in the scripture, it says those things will cause you suffering. So it's not that Buddha doesn't like you or he's going to punish you.
Yeah, but you're asking
the automatic result of those things is that they will harm you. So I'm your teacher. I have to tell you that. I can't, you know, can I give you compelling arguments for it? I really, some of them I can. I could find some scriptural references for you, but it's reported in the scriptures. And you know, try to avoid it. You don't really have to do it. I'm just saying, you know, try to, you know, as a friend, I believe in the scriptures, I believe it would hurt you. I can't, you know, dig it. Some of them I can't say. I've seen the Dalai Lama been asked the same questions. And in some cases he has to sort of, what I would say is trungdung, which is interpretive answer, you know. He has to say, well, maybe it wouldn't be so bad or something like that. Because the whole audience would freak out if he said, well, look, you can't do that. But I know you well. I can tell you, look, you can't do that. But I, you know, I'm not such a great expert on Vinaya. I hope to be. I'm working on it. And I'll try to show you. I'm just telling you, you should know what the scriptures say. That's what they say. I can show you that. And try, you know, it's not such a big deal. It's not such a great loss. Okay, four. And, you know, a lot of people freak out because they can't change their habits. And I know that. And, you know, don't make yourself crazy. You know, get the intention to change. And think about it and keep it in your mind to the point where it doesn't make you crazy. And you don't quit Buddhism class because you don't agree with that. I mean, put it away in that thing that, okay, I don't agree with it right now. I'll try to see what I can do about it, you know. But don't let it be the thing that makes you give up Buddhism and stuff like that. You know.
It's
not worth it.
If explained and clarified, it could be very helpful to a lot of people. I mean, you know.
I'll try. Boy, if they wrote an arc like that in Chaisen, I'd be in trouble. Okay. Dunma means to lie. Okay. Dunma means to lie. It's kind of defined as giving a false impression, which is kind of more delicate, right?
I thought
you know, to give an impression other than the one you have.
I thought that's what was going to happen with the communicating karma, where if you even communicate through body language, inference, or anything else, the wrong impression, that that's a negative karma.
Yeah, by the way, then the scripture says, you know, if someone says to you, did you see Josh Mo today? And you say, it's not a verbal action, but it's dunma. You know, it's to communicate by bodily action or by words a lie. So you don't get out of the lie by
What happens if you present a situation, you don't lie in the words themselves, but the way it comes out, it sounds like a lie. You know, it's the person gets a different, completely different impression of it.
I have that problem when I write my resume, you know. it's not a lie.
Yeah, exactly.
But I know the person will get a different impression
exactly.
of what really was. I like attention, and I like people's admiration. So I will imply something that's not really true, but I didn't lie, you know. And
exactly.
No, it's a lie. It's a misimpression.
It's a lie.
To give a misimpression is lying. I'm sorry. I wish it wasn't. And it's not like, what are you going to lose if you give them up? Suffering. You know, it's not that misrepresenting your resume is going to cause you any happiness. It cannot. It's a bad deed. It must cause you suffering. If you do get the job, it's because something else you did. There's no connection. But we do it. You know, it's weird. Okay, Tama. Tama is not in the Christian tent, but it's to, or I should say the Judeo-Christian tent, but it's to split up other people by saying something. It's to alienate other people. You know, you say to John, you know, you don't know it, but that guy was here last night, he was talking about you, and I know you like him. But. And by the way, it does not have to be a lie. It can be the truth also. But your intention is that I want to alienate these two people.
Is that awesome?
That's coming. I call it divisive speech. And we do it all the time. When I complain about my boss, Aya, to all my friends, which I do constantly, there's this sort of deep, subconscious thing where I want other people to understand why I don't like the person. And I wouldn't mind if other people also didn't like the person the same way I don't like the person. You know, there's this very common. It must be in the top 10. We must be doing it all day long. You know, so watch for it. It's subtle. It's just like you drop a hint. You know, you say somebody says, "Boy, he's a genius," and you go, "Yeah, well, you know, that's already chumma." You know, if it's to protect the person, that's a different thing. And somebody, you know, many people have asked me that, and that's if it's truly without any evil intent. You know, you really want to protect. You know, this guy thinks Hitler's a nice guy, and you say, "Well, look, he's killed a couple of people. You know, he probably just wants to get you." That's protecting someone. It's your it's your duty to do that. It's your bodhisattva vows. You have to tell the person that. What this refers to is where you're getting some evil glee about having other people agree to your assessment that this is a bad person, and so they don't like the person the same way you don't like the person. Then they're on your side, and that's trauma, and it's very common. We do it. And I find myself doing it all the time. There's no need for it. There's no good result from it. Karmically, it's a disaster. And check it. It's one to watch out for. Okay, tiktum. Say tiktum. Tiktum means harsh words. Oh, stupid. I do it all the time. As it's supposed to be jokes, but it hurts people's feelings. I do it all the time.
What is it
called? Harsh words. And the scripture says it can be very nice. You know, I always give the example in the grocery store when they say, "Have a nice day," and they mean, "Get the hell out of the way. Let me tell right. Let me work on the next person's groceries." You know? It can be a pleasant word. It can be a harsh word. But the intent is that it hurts the person.
It hurts other people.
Yeah.
Not like swearing.
They say if you bang your foot and say, "Shit," that's sikta.
Are you doing it to yourself?
I'm not sure. By the way, I'm sorry. I gave you the wrong example. I shouldn't have said that. When you get angry about stubbing your foot, that's a bad. You will get a bad karma. It is a kind of anger. It's not siksu. It's not a bad.
You get angry at yourself?
If it's a stupid, ignorant anger. In the Abhidharma, this is interesting. the only negative emotion which is virtuous is regret. You see, to say, oh my God, I shouldn't have done that. I'm really a dumb head. You know, I really shouldn't have lied, you know. It wasn't going to give me what I wanted anyway. It's dysfunctional. That bad feeling about what you did is a great virtue, which implies that most other bad feelings are not too hot.
All right. All these are dealing with speech?
Yeah, all these four, which is why I wrote these four together, are speech.
Excuse me, on the sub, the accent between the ra and the tsa.
It doesn't change it because it's first color.
What so is it? Thank you. Could you just...
This?
Yeah.
It's that flag on
just
the...
Just a little flag. Yeah. Thank you.
It's called the tsahak. Nakyal. Say Nakyal.
Nakyal.
Nakyal means meaningless talk. Talk with no important meaning. Now, there's a lot of exceptions. You know, if you're at a party and it would be uncomfortable for everyone if you didn't make small talk, it's not Nakyal. There's a purpose for it. Okay?
Like gossip.
It's like gossip, but if I say, did you gossip today, you probably say, no, I didn't stand on the fence with my neighbor and talk about 20 people. But did you have Nakyal all day? Probably thousands. You know, Nakyal means wasting. It's like gossip, but if I say, did you gossip today, you probably say, no, I didn't stand on the fence with my neighbor and talk about 20 people. But did you have Nakyal all day? Probably thousands. You know, Nakyal means wasting your time talking about nothing important. The worst kind of Nakyal is to recite your daily prayers and think about something else. That's the ultimate Nakyal. Seriously, that's in the scriptures. Very heavy Nakyal. And that's hard. Is it evil? Are you a bad person? Should you feel guilty? No.
But this creates bad karma. All of these things.
So what kind of negative karma do you collect from this?
You probably have to sit in a room with people talking to you these things the rest of your life. I don't know. You know how that is. People calling you out.
Want to talk about the weather?
Become a weatherman.
You have to read the daily news for the rest of your life.
When you say your prayers, Michael, sometimes your mind wanders, especially if you say in Tibetan.
You have to try to... I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm saying... Do what you can to stop it. Don't go crazy. That's dysfunctional. You'll do more bad deeds. You know, in a comfortable, happy way, try to move away from it.
Michael, what is the sense of guilt, Solange, if you feel guilty about?
Guilt is useless. There's no word in Tibetan for guilt. There's no word. There's no such word. There's no word in the Buddhist scriptures for guilt. A healthy, intelligent regret. The regret of a Buddhist and of an educated Buddhist, which you will all be by the time you finish these courses, is a wisdom. You know, to think I really did something stupid. You know, I really shouldn't have done that. I put that karmic seed in my mind. I have that perception. I understand how the perception must go through time and how that perception must come out and how I must perceive myself suffering in the future. I did a stupid thing, you know. I'm an educated Buddhist person. It was a very stupid thing to do. It was a foolish thing. I lied to get some money. There's no connection. You know, it's not like you have to feel guilty. I broke your vows and blah, blah, blah.
Well,
it was just
a dumb thing to do.
Daily,
like, I should do better, or I should pray better, you know what I'm saying?
That's fine. That's like a good intention.
Does that fall under...
But this bad feeling, if the bad feeling doesn't make you better, then it's not a virtue. The idea of guilt, where you feel bad and you don't, and it kind of keeps you down and depressed, and you feel bad about it, you don't have self-esteem, and then you get worse. This is just useless. You have to, in a happy, comfortable way, to the limit of your ability, move away from these things. But then to try to lift a weight that you can't lift. You know, to try to stop saying every meaningless thing at work tomorrow. You'll collapse. You'll break down. It's not a good thing. It's not functional. You have to do what you can. Shanti Deva says, give away vegetables. Don't cut off your arm and give it away yet. Okay. Number 8. These are all what?
Mind.
Mental. Say napsem.
Napsem.
Napsem. Napsem is coveting, just as this, the way it's said in the Ten Commandments. Exactly.
Coveting,
which means to desire in a bad way the things that other people have. It's the root of jealousy. I have it. you know, if I meet a good Buddhist scholar, do I rejoice? Usually not. It's like, oh, gee, I wonder if he's smart as I am, you know. That's napsam. Napsam is wanting the good things that other people have and being willing to do something bad to get it.
Does the component of being willing to do something bad to get it have to be?
Yeah, it does. It has a lot to do. So now, if you never act it out, is it still a karma? Yes. You know that. Yigile. It's a movement of the mind. It is a mental karma in and of itself.
Even if you don't think to do something bad to get it?
If you don't think.
So, so just thinking, I really want that.
Yeah. But mainly you will... That's a very rare case where you don't actually have any more thoughts about it. If you really have a strong napsam, you're probably going to do something.
The difference between desire
and... But it's not a mental... You know, napsam is not like you want a Cadillac or you want a $200,000 house. It can be... It's mostly little things, you know. You're jealous of someone else's good qualities. They're getting more attention than you are. They have a nice, pretty, handsome boyfriend. You don't, you know, it's like that. It's little things.
You must be willing to do something negative.
No.
You don't have to?
Not necessarily. Just the thought that...
You just said, being willing to do something bad to get it. And you emphasize that.
I did say that. Mostly.
But not necessarily.
But no, not necessarily.
And perhaps being willing to...
How about being kind of willing? How's that? I don't think
if you
it does not have to get strong enough that you actually do anything for it to be a bad deal.
But what happens if you see somebody else who has nice things and you like the same thing? So it's, oh, I wish I had the same thing. You know, not necessarily you don't want the person to have it. But you
no, that's true. Yeah, you want, that's a kind of upset, yeah.
That's also an upset?
Yeah.
unless it's dharma knowledge.
Yeah,
you see somebody with a lot of dharma knowledge and say, gee, that I wish I had that kind of knowledge.
So I could help people. That's a different thing. Obviously, that's...
It depends on the object, the motivation, and all that.
Yeah, a lot of different things. Nesem. Nesem means harmful mind or harmful intent. Or, you know, I asked the Lama. It wasn't very clear to me. And I remember where I was. It was 20 years ago. He was in the Jeep. I was sitting next to him. I said, what's Nesem? He says, it's being happy when other people fail. And, you know, I don't have this evil intent where I want to go out and shoot people on the street. But I do have this subtle pleasure when people around me fail sometimes. And that's very bad. And so if it's in the top 10, you must have it. It must be something that goes on in your heart during the day. Watch out. You don't even know you have these 10. You know, hopefully a week from now you'll think you're a much worse person. Because you'll notice them. You know, that's a normal reaction to a class like this.
But
don't worry about it.
But
you're just the same as you were a week ago.
Does that also include being happy when someone else, something bad happens?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. And it's weird, you know, we have this destructive glee in us that even people, you know, like if my boss fails, I somehow I don't feel so bad. But it's going to hurt me too, you know, hurts her, hurts the company, hurts me. And still, you kind of don't feel too bad about it. You know? You don't take as much sadness out of other people's misfortunes as you do about your own. That's a bad sign. That's nusa.
When Hitler fails, we should be happy.
With the obvious thing.
Or Charlie Chaplin falls down and you laugh.
No, that's humor. I don't. I know. You know he's not.
Well, what happens? It's just the movie. What happens if somebody is something bad happens? Or
by the way, when people bring to me these moral quandaries, you know, they said to the Dalai Lama in Los Angeles, if a guy was pushing the atomic bomb over New York City, and you were 20 feet away and you had a gun, and he's about to press it down, do you shoot or not? And he says, I'll tell you when it happens. What it means is, don't worry too much about the extraordinary special cases. I'm talking about every minute of your office day, and you know it and I know it. You know, 99.999, you know damn well when you're being bad, and you're not happy about it. It doesn't make you feel good even now, even before you understand the emptiness of it. Just stop it. Okay.
What happens if you see something bad happens to someone, but you say, thank God it didn't happen to me? But you don't rejoice about the other person.
Bodhisattva would say, I wish it had happened to me instead of that.
Oh.
Of course, that's what the whole thing is.
You know, Michael, it's a good idea. Like going to a movie and seeing people killing each other, Charlie Chaplin, the example you used, it seems to me that sitting there and thinking it's normal, it's okay, is planting the mental seeds.
Yeah, it is. It's a dangerous thing to you know, they do affect your subconscious. You have to be very careful with this. I think it's one of the diseases of our culture. And I'm not going to go prevent kids from seeing movies, but I do think it doesn't help. Okay, lockdown. Lockdown means wrong views. In this case, it's the worst of the ten. Why? Because the classic lokta is to think that you can ever do the slightest wrong deed and it won't, and nothing will happen to you. And we think that all day long or we wouldn't do what we do. We have lokta implicitly throughout the whole day. We really don't believe that if we tell a small lie, you know, people won't believe us for 20 years in a future life. You know, we just don't believe that. We really don't believe that if we hurt someone's feelings that, you know, somehow it will affect us greatly for a long time in the future. We really don't believe that. And so you got to work on that. Lokta is the root of, obviously, of all the other nine. If you have lokta, you will do the other nine. So you have to work on it. Lokta is like the main enemy. Enemy number one. Not really believing in karma. And hopefully, my goal is to give you a convincing argument when we reach the mind-only section and the Madhyamika section that you will believe in karma. And then I will start acting on it, too.
This is the end of Class 3.